Chapter 4. They cross a trio of traveling merchants on their way to Hebra. There's an outbreak of fever among the Rito, something Tebow wrote Link about. Something strange. A sleeping disease that comes quickly, then smothers the affected incrementally, relentlessly, to death over the course of a few weeks. Link sent the message back that they're coming to help. Fruit purchases would seem secondary. But Tebba's boy, Tulin, likes Lurelin's starfruit, and Link has a notion of spoiling the kid. So he picks out a dozen, sporting non-bruised specimens from a large, saddle-strapped basket. Zelda watches Link's process, while trying very hard to appear that she's not watching him, because then he might become self-aware of the faces he's making when he carefully thumbs the skin of an unsatisfactory fruit and puts it back. He kind of wrinkles his nose, looks apologetic, and tries another. Draga, who's not hiding that he's watching, says,
"Tebba is the warrior who fought with Link to subdue Va-Medo, correct?"
"Correct."
"Not the one with the accordion."
"No, that's Cass."
"Cass is the traveling musician?"
"Hence the accordion."
"Do the Rito know about Link?"
"No. They think he's a great-great-grandchild of the champion, and Link doesn't, you know, argue with them."
"You're both unbelievable."
The other two merchants, a spice trader and a fish merchant, respectively, are eyeing them a little. The larger one, the fishmonger, sits forward on his horse a little bit, squinting as though he just can't quite get a proper look at the three of them. Zelda isn't sure, but the fishmonger might be day-drinking if the slack-muscled blinking is any indicator. The spice trader looks nervous, like a woman waiting to jump in to break up a fight. Like she just knows something is going to go wrong in the next few minutes. She's certain. And then the fishmonger says,
"Oi, you're that fucking guy."
And the spice trader literally starts appealing to the gods. It takes Link a second to realize he's being spoken to. He frowns in the middle of counting out payment and doesn't answer.
"Link, right?"
Link ignores him.
"Yeah, thought so. Jesse, you shouldn't sell to him."
The fishmonger hiccups, cheerful in his bearing of bad news.
"He's a demon, you know. Traded his fucking soul to the mountain lord for power."
Another hiccup.
"People saw him riding the beast of Satori Peak across Hyrule Field. No lie."
Zelda and Draga exchange a look. It's not a surprised look. Lynx, ignoring the man, calmly ties the fruit bag to Epona's saddle to evenly distribute the weight. He selects one of the starfruit, however, and carefully sinks his teeth into it. That way, it stays in place while he mounts up. Once seated, facing his abuser, Link doesn't make any move to eat the fruit, just sits there with it in his mouth, staring. The starfruit is just the right size to make him look like a little dog with a ball. Fishmonger, too busy expounding on his story, doesn't notice. He's wagging his finger now.
"It's people like you. You're the reason."
Link reaches up and slowly takes a bite of fruit.
"You're the reason this kingdom is going to the dogs. You, people like you."
Link proceeds to slowly eat the fruit while maintaining the polite, emotionless expression of a person trapped in line with the town's fanatical but harmless whack job. Occasionally, he gives a sympathetic nod. Yes, he is a monster, demon, changeling, whatever. A were-creature, a whatchamacallit. The other merchants look ashamed. Maybe they look a little afraid, but that's mostly because Draga looks really aggravated, mounted up on his giant warhorse, looking Lionel-sized and murderous in his dark traveling gear and glaring. Eventually, they root the drunk man away, hushing him loudly as they go. Link wipes his mouth with the back of his hand and waves cheerfully.
"You rode a god?"
Draga demands when they're alone. Link looks abashed and goes back to eating his fruit, discreetly kicking Epona into a trot.
"You're joking," Tell me you're joking.
Draga follows him, sounding a little desperate.
Link, are you joking?
Link rides away faster.
Link!
Zelda watches them zigzag up the road like an absurd cat and dog, racing away too quickly for Maru to bother catching up. They all circle back after Draga finishes yelling. Knowing that, Zelda takes a moment to enjoy the quiet as the distance grows. Soon, she can't hear anything but Maru's hooves on the road. She closes her eyes then, gathering her hair at the back of her neck and turning her face into the sun. For a moment, it's just that feeling. Sunshine on her face and the rhythm of Maru walking down the road. She smiles a little. She smiles a lot. She's not sure what to do with it. The excess of happiness in that moment. So she lets it just breathe. She feels a tug, just a little, like a thread twined around something somewhere behind her breastbone and running down to her right wrist. When she opens her eyes, Link and Draga have stopped to circle back. But the sun and the happiness are easy to focus on, and she's looking forward to making fun of them when they get back to her. The point is, she does not think anything of the tug. Nothing at all. Serene Stable is populated primarily by trappers, traveling merchants, Leviathan researchers, and Rito flying in from the northwest part of Hebra. The main room's crowded, loud with guests both coming and going. Link is at the front desk smiling at the innkeeper in that way that will probably get them a discount. Zelda would tell them to knock it off, but there's something kind of fascinating about watching strangers get charmed by a man she sees so often she has no unbiased perspective of him. She and Draga claim a table near the back of the common room and start dumping gear on the floor, glad to be off the road for a moment.
I can never tell, Draga says, taking a seat, which Rito are male or female.
Which might be a strange break into conversation, except one of the Rito, a red-feathered hunter by the looks of them, is pulling Link aside to speak with him near the front door.
Can't help you there, Zelda says, sitting down across from Draga.
There isn't much in the way of sexual dimorphism in their race, at least not now. I think in different ethnicities of Rito, there are definite phenotypical signs, but so many of them have intermarried now that it's hardly a reliable checklist to refer to. A beat of quiet goes on too long as Zelda catches the look Draga's giving her.
That is to say, I don't know either. She coughs.
That one might be male, though. He's kind of tall. As though there were not tall female Rito. She bows her head.
I don't know.
Draga's leaning back in his seat, which is putting some real strain on the carpentry. He's watching Link, who's got his hands on his hips, listening to the Rito. The hunter is making a comment, Zelda thinks, about the feather token braided in his hair, because they kind of touch it with the edge of one enormous wing, lifting it from where it hangs against his chin. Which means, when they move it, they touch Link's face. Both Zelda and Draga kind of tilt their heads concurrently. Link doesn't seem bothered. Perhaps he knows the hunter. He's not smiling, but doing that calm, neutral stare that says, without a single word, I'm listening. You have my attention. The Rito laughs, then kind of bends down to say something, softly enough that Link has to turn his head and let them put the long, wicked curve of their beak near his ear.
I think, Draga says, rocking back on the legs of his chair and openly trying to get a better angle, I think that Rito is preening his hair.
Zelda snorts.
Link's not giving a damn thing away, but I think that's what's happening there.
Is he getting red?
A little.
That's probably what's happening then.
Is that flirting?
For Rito? I mean, well, it's a little more than flirting, I think.
Link takes a seat at their table a few minutes later. He's just a little pink, but otherwise calm.
He puts a single brass room key on the table between them, meaning he's sprung for a party suite and soft beds. Zelda is, very briefly, distracted by the imminent possibility of a bath and extremely soft sheets. Link presently goes about the task of unpacking things from his bag, putting his bow on the table, beginning his routine for weapon repairs with a kind of singular focus. He does not look up at either of them while he does this, though it's obvious he can feel their expectant gazes against the top of his head. He digs a bag of roasted almonds from his pack and starts eating them, studiously, even professionally, ignoring them. "Do you know that, Rito?" Zelda asks conversationally. He nods once, curtly. "Who is she? He?" Link eats a handful of almonds and says, through the lot, "He." "What did you talk about?" Link, swallowing audibly, points at the feather in his hair. "What about it?" "It can mean things," he says ambiguously. Zelda laughs. "Like what?" Draga grins, folding his arms.
"Did Fison give you an admiration plume?"
Link stiffens. Zelda gasps in delight, hands coming together against her lips. Oh, did he? Is that what they look like now?" She flops a hand at Draga when he frowns at her. "No, see, 100 years ago, a Rito would give a feather on a necklace or something more formal. Is it less formal now? Do they just put it, like, in their head feathers now? Or, oh, that's sweet. Does it still mean what it used to mean? Because back then it was like this, well, it was kind of a declaration you were interested in them, but it could just be for great admiration, or..." Link rather pointedly flips his cloak's hood up and pulls it down low over his eyes. Draga sits forward, boots flat on the floor, still grinning.
"Did that Rito come on to you because you have it?"
Link's turning red now. He just sits there for a moment, turning redder. Then,
"Maybe. But you turned him down?"
Link yanks his hood off so he can give Draga the full effect of his glare. Draga is entirely unaffected. He's got his chin propped in his palm now, kind of smiling in self-satisfaction. Zelda has both hands clasped under her chin. Link, seeing this, tosses both hands up and gives them a very clear sign with one finger and starts to go back to weapon repairs. Or at least, he starts to. But Draga sits forward and reaches over to hook two fingers around the offending braid, lifting it so he can look at it more closely. Link side-eyes him, but doesn't move away. Draga studies the detail work.
"You don't mind it when Rito men give you their attention?"
Link arches a brow. Then, after a moment, with careful enunciation, "No," he says, "I don't."
"Discount rooms, admiration plumes, Zora armor."
He flips the braid with a teasing grin.
"Do you get marriage proposals everywhere you go?"
Link stops blushing. Instead, all the blood backs out of his face and he tries, unsuccessfully, to smile. Zelda's hands just drop, however, and all traceries of previous delight evaporates. Draga, sensing he's made a mistake, immediately sits back.
"Sorry, I meant nothing by that."
Link gives up on the defensive smile, and the void left in his expression doesn't seem to fill. He starts signing.
"Do you know Zora wedding traditions?"
Zelda translates. Draga shakes his head.
"I don't."
"Zora don't make armor for their betrothed. They usually handcraft jewelry."
Link waits for Zelda to finish translating.
"Zora royalty are expected to lead soldiers in battle, physically, to be on the field, so Zora princesses craft armor with light scale for their intended."
Here, Link touches a spot just below his throat, near the dip of his collarbone. "Light scale is here, on Azora. Only the females. Thin as paper, harder than diamond. A Zora princess can spare the one over her heart, and the scale that grows back will be twice as tough every time."
Doesn't that leave the princess vulnerable for a time?
Draga asks softly. Link laughs. Once. Yes, he says. That's the point, he does not say. That she bears her heart for her people. That she might risk death for them. Link's looking very hard at the table in front of him. At his hands resting there among the tools and weapons he'd started to work on. No one says anything for a while. Zelda can't even remember Link unpacking Mipha's tunic. Featherlight scale mail, so strong it can turn aside any blade. And so obviously a treasure he doesn't dare wear it openly, lest it draw attention. She does know, sometimes, discreetly. He wears it under his tunic, in place of regular mail. She catches him sometimes, touching the filigree in the sleeves beneath his shirt. Like one counts off beads on a rosary. Maybe that's how Draga saw it, caught Link in a thoughtless moment remembering the dead. He waits until Link's shoulders relax a little before speaking again, quietly.
Did you ever get to see the Lightscale Festival?
Draga looks at Link, gets no response, so he elaborates.
The Zora hold the Lightscale Festival every year when the rains come. All Zora come back to the domain. On festival day, they send down the river with their prayers, handcrafted lanterns made from the shells of ocean creatures. Everyone knows this because all the rivers in Hyrule carry tens of thousands of lanterns to every corner of the kingdom, and every one of them has her name written inside.
Draga leans forward a little.
I lived in a land where no rivers reach, and even I know Princess Mipha was a wonder.
Link has his eyes closed. His hands are fists on the tabletop.
I'm sorry, my friend. I didn't make the connection.
Link tries to say something, but can't get the sound to touch his tongue. His hands don't move from the table where Zelda can see he's clenching them so tightly the bones of his knuckles are pushing white beneath the skin. His palms will bleed where his nails dig in. Link finally signs something, but he doesn't do it properly. He just slowly spells out the words so he doesn't need to raise his hands much. Like moving too much will disturb an old wound, like he can go still to avoid it. Zelda translates for him. Mipha and I grew up together.
I knew you grew up with the Zora. Draga murmurs. I just didn't assume who specifically.
The silence goes on long enough, Link struggling visibly to say anything for long enough, that Zelda swallows the terrible heat in her own throat. She moves on reflex, her hand moving to touch Link's hand, then stops, unsure. But she can't take it back now, so she lays her fingers carefully over his hand. Do you remember? She asks. The time that Revali and Urbosa were fighting about how to position the divine beasts, they fought about it for 3 days straight. She swallows, pressing on into his silence. They just couldn't stop fighting about everything. I thought they were going to kill each other before the calamity even came. Honestly, it was very disheartening. Zelda doesn't know how to finish that sentence. She tries a new one. Do you know that they stopped fighting because of you and Mipha? Link finally looks up. Gods, has he always been this blank with grief? Has it always been this obvious? When he's holding still, no longer moving, was it always this clear? How did she miss it? She grabs his hand with two of hers, holding tight. That day you two were sparring and anyone could see it. That you trained together for years, that you trusted each other. Mipha was the fastest, the deadliest with her beast, but the quickest to be gentle when it was right. She was so much better at everything, and I loved her too. Have I ever said that? She swallows hard. She's not allowed to cry this time. Mipha brought everyone together, everyone. And I'm so sorry for... Link's calm buckles.
He grabs her hand too tightly, crushing her fingers in his, but she ignores it. The bone-bruising pressure is a relief, an echo far, far away, because the pain has snapped up to the forefront of Link's entire being, and for a second, it's there on his face, twisted up and ugly, a knife wound, a fucking certainty. All the stillness and silence and calm scraped away to the raw face of it, the fact of it, that he is alive and Mipha is dead twice over, her body consigned for 100 years now to the tomb Varuta, her shade departed, no burial rites in the face of the final battle. Nothing left at all. Zelda is, she knows, a whole century too late for condolences. But Draga has no concept of that. He doesn't live in their distorted time frame. He just moves forward and places a hand against Link's shoulder and says,
I am sorry she's gone, Link.
And it's so normal of him. Like they're just people. Like they're anyone else. She thinks, perhaps, they don't know how to do that anymore. When the first spasm of weeping hits Link, it's not actually at the table, but in the stairwell as they move their things to their room for the night. He hits the wall like his right knee gave out suddenly, and Draga grabs the back of his tunic. He says nothing, just waits. Link recovers, physically. Literally bites it back, keeps hauling his things up the steps and into the hall. Zelda waits. Draga waits. The second spasm hits Link in the door to the suite. Again, he swallows it back, makes it two steps into the room. The third spasm floors him. Draga, seemingly prepared for this, lets Zelda pull Link onto the nearest bed while he goes about unpacking food from a rucksack. He ignores Link's hyperventilating, his shaking, the way he doesn't seem aware of the tears running from his closed eyes, or how he keeps grinding his teeth instead of sobbing. Draga just kneels in front of him to push things into his hands. A napkin with a piece of gummy cake and canteen of something that smells like honey and turpentine. Link opens his eyes long enough to shake his head, trying to refuse it. But the bigger man just presses both insistently into his lap. Link hisses, frustrated.
Just eat it and drink, Draga says. You don't have to do anything you don't want to after that, okay?
Link barely manages it, but he does manage. It's hard to cry and eat at the same time. Maybe that's the point. Whatever's in the canteen sends him into a fit of coughing. But by the time he finishes, the hyperventilation is slowing and the uncontrollable shaking is smoothing out. Draga takes the empty napkin and the canteen and sits forward enough to, with an inquiring slowness, reach a hand towards Link. When he nods, Draga carefully uses two fingers to turn his face into the lamplight, watching his pupils react to the brightness. Satisfied, he turns the touch into a soft tap against the hero's chin.
You're okay, he assures them both. Try to sleep.
What was that? Zelda asks a little suspiciously.
Probably the last Akala honey wine in the kingdom, but it seemed like the occasion.
He shrugs.
It's, strong.
A beat.
In a couple ways.
Which is about when Link collapses back onto the mattress, body slack, and lies there, breathing slowly, like every bone in his body just stopped supporting his weight. Zelda scoots back so she can peer down at him. Draga just stays where he is, kneeling, waiting. Link's gaze is pale and unfocused, roving the ceiling for a while as the full effect of the drink unfurls warm fingers through his body. He inhales, but it's shaky. Every breath has a rattle. He wipes his face with one hand. You can miss things retroactively, he says. That probably shouldn't break Zelda's heart. It does, though. Later, lying in bed, Zelda runs her fingers through Link's hair.
Not sure if that's soothing, not sure how to touch him at all. He feels like a river interrupted. He shivers in her arms, and it's dangerous. Like she could break a circuit inside him, and all that terrible agony would jump off his skin and hit her blood like lightning. She holds him anyway, fully clothed, waiting for the sun to rise, waiting for light to move across the walls, for Link to catch his stuttering breath, for Draga to move from where he's sitting with his back against the bed, arms folded, also wide awake and waiting. "Thank you," she says, much later, after Link's breathing slows and deepens. Draga turns his head.
"No trouble,"
he says in Gerudo.
"I never knew how to talk about her."
"There is no right way to speak about the dead, and no right way to comfort the living. Just make your best guess."
"She was everything to him."
"You're probably right."
A beat.
"Akala Honeywine is worth its weight in gold, you know."
Draga stands up, slowly, stretching when he gets to his feet.
"Don't tell Link. He'll just feel guilty for not enjoying it."
"Thank you, though, Draga. Really."
He turns around to look at her. She can't move because Link's sleeping on her arm, head against her shoulder, one arm around her ribs. They didn't undress, so they still smell like the road. When she moves her head, she can smell campfire smoke in Link's hair, the sour aroma of salt and sweat. Their legs are tangled, one of her knees crooked slightly between his legs, his right boot heel hooked behind hers. Draga tilts his head, and for a moment, she can't read the way he's looking at them, curled together like cats in a blanket. Then, very carefully, he moves one hand towards hers, where she's idly running her fingers through Link's hair. She stops, so Draga can, gently, tuck a section of wheat gold hair behind the other man's ear and, for a moment, lay his hand against the top of his head. Then she can read his expression, this formless kind of regret, a mirroring grief that wasn't there before, but she knows instinctively. Zelda isn't sure what to say or where that's coming from, what wound or rivaling loss. So she just lays her hand over Draga's. She threads her fingers through his from the top so her fingernails scrape just lightly at Link's scalp. They both feel him sigh deeply in his sleep. Draga catches her eyes then, just for a second. In that second, Zelda becomes aware, suddenly, of her palm pressed against Draga's knuckles, of all the bones in her hand, of all the bones in Draga's hand, of Link's breath against her collarbone. All three things common as sunlight and boring as bread in any other context but this moment. Suddenly, Link turns his head a little against her shoulder. She ignores it. She smiles, loops her fingers more firmly through Draga's, and holds his hand tightly, converting the moment into something more recognizable to her. "Thank you," she whispers. "I'm glad you're here." Draga gives her a half-smile.
"I just wanted a horse, you asshole."
She has to physically choke back the laugh to keep from waking Link.
"There's a wolf following us."
"Just one?" Link says, not looking.
"Yes,"
Draga says slowly, clearly registering Link's non-concern.
"But it's big."
Link cranes his neck to look over his shoulder, twisting in his saddle to see. Zelda looks too, and sure enough, there's a wolf on the road behind them. For a moment, she doesn't get what Draga means when he says it's big for a wolf, since the average wolf is nearly twice the size of a grown man on all fours. But then she realizes that the perspective is tricking her eyes. She thought it was nearer than it is. The wolf is quite a distance back, but it just happens to be the size of a pony. It's loping easily along the edge of the old forest path. Draga pulls Arbiter's reins, turning his horse around in the road. The wolf stops. They wait a while. The wolf doesn't move. Cautiously, they set out again down the road, and in step with them, the wolf breaks into a trot, like a Hylian retriever headed for the farm. Draga stops again, this time reaching for his bow. But Link says, unexpectedly, "Don't." Zelda looks at him. "Link? We're downwind from it." "So?"
"The horses aren't spooking,"
Draga says warily. Link stares up the road at the wolf, face interested but blank, eyes fixed on it in a way she's not sure she understands. For a moment, she thinks the light in his eyes is animal green, backlit by fairy luminescence, but she can't be sure. He pulls Epona around to face the beast. The wolf cants its massive head at him. Now that she's really looking at it, the beast's fur seems matted, like it's got its hackles up, or... no, not that. It's just... almost maned, like a lion along the back of his neck and spine. Storm gray, cream underbelly and jaws. She can't quite make it out, but she thinks there's a marking on its forehead, like a sigil whirled there in ink. Its eyes, though, bright, almost phosphorescent blue in the dark mask of fur. "What is it, Link?"
"A god, maybe," he says.
"Of what?" Draga murmurs.
"The forest." Link hasn't taken his eyes off of it.
"Or wolves."
Draga surreptitiously glances at Zelda. He's palmed the massive recurve bow from his back, his other hand resting on the quiver at his hip. They've traveled together long enough that Zelda knows Gerudo gods don't walk the roads of their sacred lands in physical forms, and to him there's some question in his mind. What is divinity and what is demonic in this kingdom? She can feel that tang in the air that suggests he's idly pulling some sorcery to bear, close to his skin, like heat off a stone. Link doesn't seem to notice, or if he does, he doesn't care, because he dismounts. Epona seems equally indifferent, lipping his shoulder fondly as he moves toward the wolf.
"Link,"
Draga says through his teeth. When he's ignored, he looks at Zelda. "I don't think it's dangerous," she says. She glances at Draga. "What are you feeling?" He lowers his voice and in Gerudo says,
"Like it ripped my throat out in a past life."
Before she can react to that, Link kneels in the middle of the road, one forearm braced against his knee, opposite fist set in the dirt. She can't hear it, but she's pretty sure he's speaking. Words low and unfamiliar. The giant wolf tilts its head back and forth, like it's listening to whatever he's saying, and for a moment, Zelda could believe it. A rogue god of wolves, hearing a traveler's prayer on the road, the forest bending inward with every divine looping breath. But then the giant wolf kind of bounces on its forelegs. Then it bounds forward in a single terrifying lunge, so fast Link jerks, but not fast enough, and the beast knocks him down and drags a giant tongue from his chin to forehead. Then it barks, panting, and bounds off into the trees, vanishing into the underbrush. Link sits there, kind of stunned, blinking. Draga lowers his bow, and the air around him seems to cool.
"Mad,"
he says, turning his horse around. Link scrubs at his face and turns to look at Zelda. He seems genuinely perplexed. "You should stop being strange in front of Draga," Zelda says, ignoring his confusion. "He'll catch on if you don't rein it in." Link just grins at her. Maybe Link wasn't taking the fight seriously. Maybe it's been a while since he fought a person and not a monster. Either way, he seems genuinely surprised to find himself flat on his back, all the air knocked out of him. For a moment, he just kind of lies there, eagle spread, looking puzzled. Draga looms overhead,
He's holding that claymore-sized scimitar one-handed. He seems vaguely unimpressed. Link nurses the region just below his sternum where, after blocking a blow like a cannonball, Draga swatted his defense aside and put a backhanded pommel in his gut. He grimaces, struggling to sit up, and Zelda can't remember the last time she saw anything short of a Lynel put Link in the dirt.
"Focus, or I'm going to hurt you," Draga says.
"I'm not healing either of you," Zelda shouts from her seat very far away. The horses are penned around the log she's sitting on, grazing boredly around her. She raises her voice. "This is going to end badly."
"Don't worry," Draga calls. "We'll be back to Lynel hunting or dragon chasing or army killing or whatever terrible thing you found for us to do."
"Healing sick Rito children, you mean? That?" Link sits up warily. Draga smirks at him.
"You best just use whatever magic you have, hero. I plan to do some cheating of my own."
A beat.
"I didn't hit you that hard."
Link climbs back to his feet, wrinkling his nose at his opponent.
"Forgot how to lose?" Draga asks, squaring up casually. "Or does that sword do all the work?"
Link hefts his sword a little and rolls his shoulder. He eyes Draga sidelong as he takes up a defensive stance across from him. They're not using shields, which Zelda thinks might be more to Draga's advantage than Link's. The man with double his reach, height, and body weight. But then again, Link's never up to size against any opponent. It also rarely makes a difference against Link's inhuman precognition and speed. And more to the point, Link has that blade in hand, and there's nothing in the universe that stops him, truly, when it's awake.
"Ready?"
Draga says, the scimitar up, angled slightly between them. Link exhales, then nods. It's instant. Draga darts across the space between them so fast Link only just manages the footwork to block. Zelda's palms itch. She rubs them together as Draga slams Link's sword aside in a series of deadly rapid swings, each one hitting with such force that the third blow throws Link staggering. Draga's fast, despite his size. He's immediately in Link's guard for the follow-through, slashing at his open flank. Link has to dive roll to the right, scramble back, then somersault away from the two-handed downswing. Draga's sword slams into the ground like a pickaxe. Link lands cat-like, then lunges. Draga's wide open, fully committed to his previous swing, and wrong. Draga pivots, raking the ground with his free hand and flings gravel directly into Link's face. He flinches. Draga puts a boot in his chest and hits Link so hard he skids in the dirt for 3 meters before rolling back to his feet. He looks shocked. He coughs, grips his ribs with one hand, blade up with the other. Draga inspects a long tear in his shirt, a shallow cut in his light mail from his hip to his shoulder. A defensive swing, struck before he could kick Link out of range. Draga eyes him, clearly deciding on another attack. But Link's giving him a look, confused, almost hurt, blue-eyed and just on the edge of anger. He wipes the dirt from his face pointedly.
"This isn't tournament rules," Draga says, a little exasperated. "Cheat back, hero."
Link tilts his head. There's something a little predatory about how he does that. He rotates the sword in his hand a little, then grips the hilt hard, like he hadn't had a proper hold before, and Zelda feels the change, a focus running from the blade to his palm to his boots and rooting him in some previously untapped current in the earth. Grounding him. The hair rises along her arms and she sits forward, frowning. Link squares up again. Draga does too, slowly. He can smell the change, the same as she can, but she can tell it interests him. She can feel that shapeless density Draga has coming to bear somehow, like extra gravity, like the world pulls in more tightly around him and he brings his blade to bear. Zelda shivers, digs her nails into the mossy wood beneath her.
"Ready?"
Link nods. Zelda catches the split-second grit in the dirt when they both leap forward, where their boots push off the earth. Then the deafening explosion when Draga's sword connects with the divine blade and explodes. Not snaps, explodes, like a black powder charge detonating between them. Draga hits the ground on his back, snarling, armor smoking, the tang of metal and defensive magic, thick, almost sickly sweet, and likely the only reason Draga's head is still attached. The remains of the scimitar rain down in brittle pieces, the hilt landing somewhere in the woods. Zelda's on her feet immediately. Draga! Link lands in a crouch. She's never seen that expression before. That razor-thin edge of grief and shock where she can see him replaying the thousand alternate universes where his friend is dead by his hand. He throws the Master Sword down and dashes forward. Zelda is already on her knees beside Draga, who's levered himself up into a sitting position, grimacing as he inspects his sword arm. There's blood. A lot of blood. The entire limb shakes, either from the pain or struck tendon. There's a gash in his palm, and his fingers, like the hilt of his own sword, turned against him and cleaved through his glove into his hand. Bone glints in the red pulse of blood, and Link stares at the wound, speechless. He tries to say something, but the syllables stick so violently they almost manifest a stutter. Draga shakes his head.
No, I goaded you into it. It's not your fault.
You're an idiot, Zelda snaps at him, heat gathering in her palms. She does not look away from her work, one hand holding his wrist, the other cupping the back of his knuckles. Her fingers start to glow internally. He broke your wrist and most of the bones in your hand, and you're lucky that's all it did. You knew what that blade was. Why on earth did you try this?
He shrugs. Wanted to see what the Lynel felt like.
The Lynel felt dead, Draga.
Well, I don't. So all's well, princess.
Do not princess me while I'm gluing your arm back together.
He nods, almost thoughtful. Can I tell you two something?
Link makes an exasperated noise of assent.
What? She grouses, eyes fixed on the knitting skin beneath her fingers.
I think, if I'd managed my focus a little better, I'd have had that exchange.
Zelda looks at him. She's not sure what his face is telling her when she studies him for any sign he's joking. That he's serious about defending against the blade that seals evil when Link's holding it with any real intention. He seems calm, polite. She doesn't think he's unrealistic about things, and that concerns her. His sincerity that he can beat Link, that he'd like to. She feels a shiver climb her spine, a cold crawl in her body. What? For God's sakes, it's just Draga. Link's hovering anxiously behind her, watching her undo the damage. The familiar recapturing of stray blood and the atomic stitching of muscle and skin. She erases any sign that there was a fight between them.
There, Draga says, showing Link. No harm done and nothing a couple of fairy tonics couldn't undo, even if Zelda didn't loan us her expertise.
She feels Link start to smile without looking, a quiet glow of relief. You are not immortal, she says. Being brave or reckless doesn't make you immortal. Draga flexes his hand. Looks sharply at her. Link, too, because he recognizes the words and the tone. Zelda looks over her shoulder at him, glaring. You know better, she says.
Zelda,
Link starts to say, but she's already on her feet and walking off.
Don't fight again, she says loudly.
She can't explain her panic, the cold rise of her hair and goose flesh, the heat behind her eyes, her mouth bone dry. She can feel them staring after her, confused. Good. They'll think she's just mad at them for injuring themselves, upset generally at their recklessness, their bloody-mindedness, the usual sensible reasons for being mad, and not this instinctive terror, a terrible déjà vu.
It's in the roots of her teeth, in her palms, the marrow of her bones. She stays away from camp until her hands stop shaking. When she comes back, Link and Draga are seated cross-legged facing one another in the grass. Link is signing,
"I love pie."
Which seems odd until Draga awkwardly mirrors Link's hand motions and says,
"That seems lengthy for a hello."
Link maintains his cool,
"No, it means hello."
Draga signs,
"I love pie."
Link smiles.
"Like that?"
Draga says, suspicious.
"Yes."
And suddenly, Zelda is less anxious than she was before.